As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Go, man. Tear it up, dude.
You're listening to Here's the Catch with David Lombardi, Matt Barrows, and Dennis Brown on the Athletic Podcast Network.
The San Francisco 49ers have vanquished their primary arch rival, the Dallas Cowboys. The most glamorous rivalry that there is in the NFL. Another chapter goes into the 49ers' favor. Two straight years, they've beaten the Cowboys in the playoffs. 19-12, it was a rousing victory, Matt. It was a playoff-style victory. I mean, this is... The way I look at it, this was the 11th anniversary of the Kyle Williams fumble. So we saw a big connection to the 49ers past yesterday when George Kittle gave the touchdown ball to Jerry Rice, right? And we talk all about the 49ers-Cowboys history. But a lot of the 49ers past is also filled with playoff heartbreak and gut-wrenching defeats in games just like the one that we saw yesterday against the Cowboys. Those games, though, typically happened against the New York Giants, right? So that's why I talked about the 11th anniversary of the two fumbles from Kyle Williams at Candlestick in the January 2012 NFC Championship game. But you could also go back to January 1991, 49ers going for the three-peat. Roger Craig fumbled, and they lost the game 15-13 to the Giants. My point is that defensive bruising battles, the kinds that we had seen in the past in the playoffs of the 49ers, those generally haven't gone the 49ers' way in the postseason, especially when they've shot themselves in the foot with a bad fumble. And they did that yesterday. Ray McLeod fumbled that punt, and Dallas regained possession. But the difference in this game was that the 49ers were good enough to overcome that. And that's why I think this victory was so notable. The offense stayed composed with a rookie quarterback. The defense was otherworldly again. We'll talk about Fred Warner and just some sensational plays. But the 49ers did what they had failed to do earlier in their franchise history, and that is win one of these postseason games when not everything went their way, right? I know it doesn't all go your way in every game, but this was one of those games that historically the 49ers had lost in the postseason, and they beat the Cowboys to advance to the NFC Championship in Philadelphia instead.
Yeah, I mean, look how that second half began. I mean, the 49ers have been an excellent, excellent second half team. And they begin the second half on Sunday by stopping the Cowboys on their possession and forcing a punt. And you're thinking, okay, this is where the 49ers traditionally take control. And then they fumble away that punt. And I can guarantee you that everybody in that stadium was thinking, oh, gee, this has a different vibe to it. I don't know which way this game is going to go. I think they were winning 9-6 at that time. And all of a sudden, the Cowboys have momentum. They've got the ball on the 21-yard line. You know, Dak Prescott has been up and down, but he's gotten yards against this team. But the 49ers still were able to manage their kind of second half heroics. They stopped the Cowboys on that drive, forced a field goal that ties the game at 9. And then the 49ers get a nice return from Ray McLeod. I think that's a punt on that position. But on the next two possessions, that's when the game started to swing. And all the bells and whistles went out the door. There weren't any just gorgeous throws down the sideline or long outside runs by Christian McCaffrey. It was all kind of gritty between the tackle stuff, and some gritty throws too from Brock Purdy, some tight window throws. As you noted, playoff type of throws and runs. And I thought that the 49ers had to be encouraged that they can win sort of that struggle in the mud type of game. One of the storylines going into the game was the 49ers hadn't played anybody good since the Chiefs. And the Cowboys were the first good team that they played since mid-October. The 49ers were the better team in this one. I thought, another storyline going into the championship game is, was this game a good warm-up for playing the Philadelphia Eagles? And is it a better warm-up than the Eagles got from the Giants? And I would have to say it was. I mean, the 49ers had to play championship-style football in order to win this one. Pretty much mistake-free football, the Ray McCloud fumble notwithstanding. But, you know, they didn't miss any extra points, didn't miss any field goals. Brock Purdy didn't toss any interceptions, et cetera, et cetera. And that ended up being a big difference in this game.
Massive, massive difference in this game where, you know, it was one of those slugfests where every single punch was felt. You know, you could feel it in the press box, you could feel it in the stands. It was one of those, I call it a tractor pull. It's those games where you're just fighting for field position, where yardage doesn't come for free. You know, a tug of war, arm wrestling match, whatever metaphor you want to apply, definitely worked in this game. And the 49ers, you know, they started this game, I think, on the shorter end of the arm wrestling match. Dallas had them past that 90-degree angle in the Cowboys' favor. But over time, the 49ers proved to be the physically stronger team, and I think that's what Kyle Shanahan anticipated in his game planning. He knew that the 49ers would have to nickel and dime Dallas into submission, and we really saw this game turn around halftime. I think when you saw Dallas's fatigue, remember they're playing with two fewer days of rest than the 49ers, so you saw that fatigue start to kick in. They lost Carlos Watkins, one of their starting defensive tackles in the first half, and I think that started to catch up with them in the second half. Several of the 49ers players in the trenches actually told me that they sensed, you know, weakness there. They sensed that Dallas might have been tiring out a little bit as this game went along because of that one injury. But to capitalize on, you know, what the 49ers did and to tilt the game into their favor, because remember, the Cowboys are maybe the best pass rushing team in football. It's between them and Philadelphia, the 49ers' next opponent. So to tilt the game away from the ears pinned back pass rushing mode of Dallas into running right at them and succeeding. And Dallas is not a bad run defense either. They're better than Philly, by the way. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But for the 49ers to move this game onto their terms, it took patience, it took grittiness, it took execution of a full 60-minute plan, and ultimately, Matt, that 60-minute plan was executed. The 49ers in the first half averaged 2.5 yards per carry. In the second half, it wasn't great, but it was 4.1 yards per carry, and it certainly shows you the progress the 49ers made. This was, you know, this game was a construction. They had to build it over a full 60 minutes. And at the end of those 60 minutes, they were upset 19-12 and headed to the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, you hear a lot of, I think Peyton Manning said this on the Manning Cast the other night, is that you really don't go into halftime and make adjustments. There are no adjustments being made. What the 49ers do is figure out what the opponent was doing and what was working for them. And so what you end up doing is kind of honing down your game plan to what you think is going to work. And so this is what Trent Williams was telling me. Trent Williams, by the way, if you haven't read David's piece on the daily or the weekly summit that Trent Williams and Nick Bosa have after games, Sundays was the mother of all summits, because it started at Williams' locker the way it always does. And then they went into the hot tub. And those guys were in the hot tub for what must have been 45 to 50 minutes. You know, they're supposed to be talking to the media at that point, and we're supposed to be starting our stories. But two of the main players on the 49ers are kind of going over the game together in towels in the hot tub room. And when Trent Williams finally came out, that's what he told me, is that, you know, the 49ers, the Cowboys were doing such an excellent job, got such good talent at defensive end and at linebacker, outside linebacker with Micah Parsons, that all of their outside stuff just wasn't working. So the 49ers simply decided to go with what was working. And that was some of the gap stuff, some of the inside zones, basically between the tackle stuff. And there wasn't a lot of room in there. Their longest gains were like, you know, McCaffrey's longest run, I think, was like 7 yards. But in that game, that was a gold mine. That was exactly what they needed. So my point is that the 49ers began just kind of honing in on one or two types of runs that they knew that they could get some push. And I wonder whether Watkins' injury influenced that as well. And it was enough. I mean, it was an old school type of mentality and game plan. What it did was led to some points, 10 points, and it kept the ball out of the Cowboys' hands. I mean, the 49ers owned a huge stretch between the end of the third quarter and the fourth, where they were kind of methodically picking up first downs. And like I said earlier, there were some short Brock Purdy throws to Christian McCaffrey in particular, a couple to Fred Warner as well, that were part of that. But it was sort of the same mentality. Let's just kind of squeeze it in there, grind out as many yards as we can, and hopefully by the end of the drives, we'll have points and the Cowboys will just have only a little bit of time to make up the ground, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, the 49ers executed it to a T. They capitalized on those second half possessions. That 91-yard drive is what I wrote about because I thought it was the drive of George Kittle. You know, when you have a defense as good as the Dallas defense was, and they were not just good up front, right? They lead the league in pressure rate. By the way, we should probably talk a little bit about Philly, too, because of the similarities and the differences and the challenges between this week and next week for the 49ers. But NFL pressure rates by team, number one, Dallas, 44%. They get pressure on 44% of snaps. Philly's number two at 40%. Philly's got a better sack rate, but Dallas has a better pressure rate. And analytics people will tell you that pressure rate's actually more indicative of pass rush quality than sack rate, because sack rate's very dependent on the opposing quarterback. But anyway, I digress. This Dallas defense, awesome with the pressure, but also really good on the back end. I mean, they're really fast on the back end. So it was causing the 49ers some trouble with throwing lanes and all this and all that. That 91-yard drive epitomized what the 49ers need to beat excellent defenses, and that's balance. And is there a player who better embodies balance than George Kittle? Because he's one of the best run blockers in the league at the tight end position, if not the best, right? He's awesome at that. But he was also beating cornerbacks on pass patterns yesterday. That first catch from George Kittle, that he burned a cornerback, Deron Bland. That's a cheat code to me, Matt, when you could have the best run blocker in football at the tight end position also beat a corner. I mean, Kittle's 250 pounds and he's outrunning an outside cornerback. We saw something similar on the other side of the football when Fred Warner covered CeeDee Lamb. I mean, the 49ers just have this insane positional versatility on both sides of the ball. That makes them the most talented team in football. But anyway, you need that balance to beat an excellent defense. And Kittle delivered it on that drive, obviously famously through the catch that took 9 yards to make. He first touched the ball at the 39-yard line, and he finally secured it at the 48-yard line. So I called it the 9-yard catch. It was a 30-yard gain. But that play really sparked the 49ers. Then Kittle drew the defensive holding that nullified the third down sack. And then Christian McCaffrey waltzed into the end zone, tossed the ball up in the air. Kittle called for the fair catch, made it, handed the ball to Jerry Rice. The rest was history. I mean, I thought that was a beautiful connection between past and present when you're playing the Cowboys in the playoffs of all teams. But that 91-yard drive, Matt, is going to go down in 49ers lore. We're going to look back at this game, especially if they win the Super Bowl, But even if they don't, it's still 49ers Cowboys in the playoffs. You could look back 30 years from now and talk about this epic defensive battle at Levi's Stadium and the 91-yard drive that ended up being the difference in the 49ers' favor.
Yeah, I mean, Kittle epitomizes this offense in the same way that Deebo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey do, which is that he can get you running the ball or catching it. I mean, and he's not usually doing the running, but he's doing the run blocking. I mean, it was Kittle. Kittle had a quiet day on the stat sheet against the Seahawks, but it was anything but as far as run blocking. He and Kyle Juszczyk, were on the field delivering great blocks on all of the big explosive runs and plays that they had in that game. So it's the second straight great game for him. I really think that, you know, there was some hand-wringing about Kittle and his future and is he worth all this money. That was at the beginning of the season when Kittle was not at full health. Remember, he missed the first two games, and really it took him a while to kind of get back into stride. But now that he is, you just see how valuable he is on the field. And then from an emotional standpoint, too, I mean, he's really the engine. The heartbeat of this team in so many ways. I thought it was just, and he's always, he's got that kind of wrestler's persona. I don't know whether you caught this, but after McCaffrey's touchdown, McCaffrey just whips the ball into the air. I mean, I don't know, 40 feet into the air in celebration. Kittle sees it and like runs under it and makes a kind of a shoestring catch and pretends that he caught a touchdown. I mean, here we are in the divisional playoff game, all this tension, and George Kittle's doing some shtick in the end zone. So I thought that was pretty funny and just kind of underscores exactly who he is. But yeah, it was a tremendous game for him, they're going to need it against the Eagles. And I think it just kind of shows you who the 49ers are, that, they were leaning on Deebo Samuel in the first half. I thought Deebo Samuel had a really nice first half. I think the Cowboys decided, okay, we're not going to let Deebo Samuel beat us for a second straight playoff game, and they began taking him out of the picture. What do you do when that happens? Well, you go to somebody else, and the two guys that they really leaned on in the second half weren't McCaffrey and Samuel. They were George Kittle and Elijah Mitchell, who ended up leading this team in rushing yards. And we're talking about sort of gritty between the tackle, no room to run type of running. That's Elijah Mitchell's specialty. And I thought that he showed up really well in the second half of the game.
Absolutely.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC. Brady.
And the 49ers have that deep stable of running back talent, and Elijah Mitchell started bruising there in the second half. It was a very satisfying game for not only the 49ers offensive linemen, but for their running backs. I mean, teams love winning in this kind of fashion. You know, football players love winning that kind of fashion because you really feel that you've earned something. And the first thing, you know, I actually walked in on the meeting, not the hot tub part of it, when the meeting was still at the locker with Trent Williams and Nick Bosa, I just walked up and started talking to him because, you know, one thing was really cool before the game. Joey Bosa surprised Nick Bosa at the game. So Joey was there wearing a hooded sweatshirt that said squishy on it because the Bosa family calls sacks squishies. So they had custom made shirts with the hoodies that said squishy on it. So anyway, the 49ers come out through the club at the start of the game before pregame warmups, and Joey Bosa was waiting there with Cheryl, who's both Joey and Nick's mom. And Joey's girlfriend was there as well. He was waiting to greet Nick, and it was a huge surprise. And I was like, oh my God, what a moment. And I started videotaping, and Nick is coming out in full uniform, has his helmet on, everything. And he sees Joey, and we know how locked in Nick is, you know, during and before these games, right? I just saw Nick's eyes just light up in a way, you know, the happy emotion in a way that I've never seen him, you know, before when he's in that locked in state. And he just gave Joey the biggest hug. And it was just such a cool moment. Anyway, I got video of it, so I had to show Nick the video. So I walk up, and he and Trent Williams are sitting there talking. And, you know, the first thing that Nick says is, that was one of the most awesome games I've ever been a part of. I absolutely loved every second of it. I mean, you could just tell that this guy lives for a bar fight like that. Nick Bosa doesn't like when the game is 50-48. Nick Bosa likes when it's 9-6, 16-12, 19-12. You know, he likes those weird score kind of games because to him, that means that playoff football has arrived and the guys in the trenches relish that, right? And Williams and Bosa, they're two of the best players in the trenches in all football. And let's be honest, Matt, offensive and defensive line play is what's going to determine the Super Bowl. Whoever ends up standing on the mountaintop when this is all said and done, it's going to be because they won the battles at the line of scrimmage. It's not the most glamorous thing to talk about, but it always is the truth. Even when, you know, you could go back to the Mahomes Super Bowls a couple years ago, Patrick Mahomes looked great against the 49ers because Kansas City ultimately won at the line of scrimmage, right? Mainly on the other side of the ball. His defense beat the 49ers O-line. Well, the very next season, Patrick Mahomes looked terrible in the Super Bowl because his O-line had five backups and they totally caved in front of him against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So the trenches are going to determine what happens moving forward. And I think that's why, you know, it's very prudent of us to frame a lot of this conversation around the meeting between Trent Williams and Nick Bosa, because what happened on both fronts against the Cowboys was extremely significant and was, I think, the biggest reason that the 49ers won the game.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Kyle Williams fumbles in the 2011 season, 11 years ago. And that game was absolutely a trench warfare game. Low scoring, went into overtime. There was rain. It was an ugly game, one that the 49ers were really well suited to win. I thought for all the world that they were going to win that one, and obviously the two Kyle Williams fumbles put the Giants over the top. But yeah, this game had a similar feel, you know, the difference was that it was the 49ers who were winning the turnover margin by game's end. And the way that the defense played was, a couple of lapses there. There was a long throw to CeeDee Lamb. There was a bad penalty by Dre Greenlaw. There were a couple times where they just couldn't get Dak Prescott on the ground, which I think is a really big deal considering who their upcoming opponent is. But even with that giant throw to CeeDee Lamb, usually kind of a back-breaking type of play, I think they forced a punt on that series. They didn't end up getting great field position because of it, but they were able to recover from some of these things. And then the Ray McLeod fumble was another example. Oh, this is going to be the death blow. The Cowboys are going to go right into the end zone. They're going to take the lead. The momentum's going to turn, and the 49ers held them there. And the Cowboys only managed to tie the game, and then they couldn't score again the rest of the contest. So the 49ers held when they needed to. Wasn't perfect, wasn't dominant. I don't think Nick Bosa got any sacks, but that front line was harassing Dak Prescott throughout the game and harassing him into some pretty remarkable mistakes as well.
Yeah, I mean, and the 49ers got regular season Dak, who was not good this year. He had a 3.8% interception rate. We talked a lot about INT rates. And we were talking entering the season, Jimmy Garoppolo's interception rate of 2.7% on his career was too high, right? You want to be down at around 2%. That's the league average, I think, is 2.1, 2.2%. And we really glowed about Garoppolo this year because he got it down under 1%. He had an elite interception rate this year. Brock Purdy's also been really good. So the 49ers, I think, you know, the main impact piece has been Christian McCaffrey. Spaced out the field, has given quarterbacks an outlet, and you know they're not forcing passes into tight windows that are not recommended to throw into. But anyway, that's just all comparison for the terrible body of work that Dak Prescott put out this year. 3.8% interception rate, and then you know everybody acted like a good game against Tampa Bay would just erase all of that. He didn't throw any picks. He was 25 of 33 against the Buccaneers, but Prescott went right back to where he was during the regular season when he threw those 15 interceptions yesterday, and only two in the box score, right? There was the first one to Diometer Lenore. Lenore told me that on tape he had noticed that Prescott threw high when he went to his number two receiver. So Lenore was ready to jump, and he used all of his 40-inch vertical leap to go up and get that ball. And then the second one looked at like the pick at the stick to Navarro Bowman without the return. But Jimmy Ward tipped it, and then you had Fred Warner make the catch. But there could have been two more really easily, right, in the second half, including a Dre Greenlaw pick six. But Greenlaw couldn't hold on to it. So, I mean, we talk about the fact that the 49ers lead the league with 22 interceptions. They lead the league in turnover differential, and they had both of those things play out in their favor in a game where on paper it seemed that might be possible, right? Because Dak Prescott had been an interception machine, and it was really key that he reverted back to that after a one-game hiatus against Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I think the difference with Tampa Bay is that he was really comfortable against Tampa Bay. Very little pressure that he was having to deal with. And so he wasn't put in any high-stress situations, and probably most quarterbacks are going to look good in those scenarios. And that certainly wasn't the case on Sunday. Was the fourth one another Diometer Lenore chance, I think, to Schultz maybe down the sideline? The fourth chance for an interception?
Yes. And then there was also one that was a tip at this wouldn't have been Prescott's fault. Ezekiel Elliott bobbled it at the goal line, and the ball popped up and had, I mean, for some reason there was zero 49ers defenders in that area. I think on any other down, just the way that you roll the dice, there could have been somebody there. It could have been a pick six, but everybody was kind of congregated toward the middle of the field. So the Cowboys were playing with a lot of fire, and they got burnt twice by the interception bug.
I was noting how the game ended very similarly to how last year's game in Dallas ended. I mean, the 49ers were in control late in the quarter and forcing the Cowboys to go into a last-second drive with no timeouts. Last year's game was just inundated with mistakes and penalties and, giving the Cowboys life after life. This one, they shut the door very quickly. They were much more efficient. I haven't looked up the penalty disparity between the two teams, but I have a feeling like it was very one-sided in favor of or with the Cowboys having a lot more penalties than the 49ers. So it was a fairly clean game. The Dre Greenlaw hit out of bounds. every couple of games, Greenlaw seems to be good for one of those. But other than that, it was a well played, kind of smartly played game by the defense. Another really good reflection on D'Amico Ryans. And then the play that I liked the most was the Jimmy Ward hit at the end. You could tell that the Cowboys were setting up for some sort of Stanford band type of scenario where they're going to do all sorts of shenanigans and pitches and laterals. And Jimmy Ward said, no, not on my watch. He just planted that Cowboys receiver into the ground, like left no doubt. Like this was going to be the last play of the game, no matter what. And it was just a kind of a statement tackle. I thought that Jimmy Ward and Fred Warner had the two best games of the defensive players. Ward was very solid, seemed to have his hand on the ball quite a bit. So another second straight really good game for him.
How about Azeez Al-Shaair on the play that you're talking about, Matt? They, for some reason, they decided it'd be a good idea to have Ezekiel Elliott snap the ball. Now maybe people will understand why we talk about the 49ers offensive line and how they've kind of revamped it to be heavier and stronger, anchoring in pass protection, right? We say, hey, you know, more agile, lighter guys, they may struggle against the bull rush. Okay, well, here's Exhibit A. The Cowboys obviously put a more agile, lighter guy at center on that last play in Ezekiel Elliott, and Azeez Al-Shaair just completely trampled him. It was, I mean, it. I don't understand. That was the epitome of stupidity from the Cowboys. The center is ineligible. I guess they wanted an extra guy to be able to lateral to. That's why Ezekiel Elliott was in there. But guys, like you, there's a reason you can't have a 200 and he's no more than 220, 225 pounds, right? There's a reason you can't have a guy that light snapping the football, because all you have to do is bull rush him and he's not going to be ready to plant his feet. And Elliott ended up 5 or 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage after Al-Shaair was through with him. Anyway, that play had no chance of working, regardless of who they had at center. I just thought it was kind of a symbolic ending.
It was symbolic. I mean, I remember asking Shanahan after that fateful play between the Raiders and the Patriots. I mean, how often do you guys practice those, you know, last play of the game scenarios? And his answer was never. There's just not enough time in a day. I mean, you're practicing so many crucial plays that why would you burn time on a play that you might never use? So, I mean, you could tell that this was sort of maybe dreamt up on the sideline, like a sort of like a basketball play being sketched out quickly on a whiteboard somewhere. But those are all basically ad-libbed, and that certainly had a improvisational feel to it at the end of the game there.
It was a coronation for the 49ers defense. So let's look larger picture here, just to wrap up, Matt. You know, there was so much talk about the 49ers not having played anybody, even though they had played teams. To me, it seemed they had wrecked some teams, like the Dolphins earlier this year. The 49ers' strength of schedule would look a lot better if the 49ers didn't play the teams on their schedule, because you see that the teams they played all lost after they played the 49ers, right? So the 49ers actually hurt their own strength of schedule by beating teams physically so bad over the course of this year. But I kind of feel that narrative was put to rest yesterday, because Dallas was, I think, clearly a really good team. And the 49ers defense, which, you know, there were questions about the quality of competition it faced, they deserved some time in the sun there, right? At the very end of the game. That was their time in the sun, or under the stadium lights, technically, to just lay Dallas out and end the game with an exclamation mark.
Yeah, I thought that by the time that game started, the five best teams were still playing. I probably would include the Bills in there. I actually expected them to win against the Bengals, but we're down to only good teams, really good teams are remaining now. And like I said earlier, I think that this was a really good warm-up for the Philadelphia Eagles, because there are some similarities there in the Eagles. Boy, that offense is complete. You talk about Schultz and what he was able to do the last couple of games. Dallas Goedert is better than Schultz. I mean, Dallas Goedert is probably the most Kittle-like. I shouldn't say that. Hockenson might be the most Kittle-like tight end that's not in San Francisco. Goddard's very good. They obviously have two really good wideouts, and A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. You got a deep guy. You've got a good slot type of receiver. You've got an excellent running back, and you've got an excellent quarterback. So, I mean, this is the test. I mean, we talked about the Chiefs and what that Chiefs game meant to this team, and how the 49ers sort of woke up with a cold bucket of water that the Chiefs delivered against them. This game coming up is going to be the most like the Chiefs, unless they actually play the Chiefs, that the 49ers are going to have. So it's going to be a great challenge, and strength versus strength in this game. I'm sure we'll talk about it during the week. But I thought that the Cowboys were a really, really good warm-up for what the 49ers are going to face in Philadelphia.
Not going to be for the faint of heart, that's for sure. The Eagles are good. They're good, but the run defense is sketchy. That's the one thing I'll say before we sign off right here, because we're going to go off and discuss this game over the course of the week. The run defense is definitely the Achilles heel for Philadelphia. They have three losses this year, and in two of those three losses, they were completely dominated in time of possession. You could easily see the formula that Kyle Shanahan is going to try to go for in this game. He's going to try to exploit that run defense, and if Philly stacks the box to try to make up for it, he's going to try to go big plays over the top. It's going to be riding on Brock Purdy, and he's going to try to win the possession battle. If you win the possession battle, you shield the defense. And you know what? Philly hasn't been here before, and the 49ers have. The 49ers have been to three NFC championship games in the past four seasons. So it's, you know, buckle up. Philly has the home field advantage. They have the rest advantage. But the 49ers have the experience advantage, and they may have the matchup advantage with that run game. That's going to be, if they can dictate the flow of this game, there's a reason why the spread is only Philly minus three, you know, and there's a couple points that go for home field advantage. So it's going to be special. Philadelphia, San Francisco, in the city of brotherly love on Sunday, NFC Championship game. 49ers beat their arch rivals, the Cowboys, 19-12. Muscle flexing performance for the 49ers, one that you will be talking about for a long time. That was another great chapter in what has been a legendary rivalry, 49ers and the Cowboys. For Matt Barrows, this is David Lombardi. We'll talk to you next time on Here's the Catch.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.